The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone. This episode of H2O, Jason Hunt here in the studio with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
We have coffee in hand.
We do.
We've been playing around with WordPress themes on a new venture, and we're recording very late on my parents' anniversary. My parents are married 53 years today.
See? Congratulations. That's
cool. It can be done.
It can be done.
It can be done. I didn't do it, but it can be
done. Neither did I. I cheerfully managed to not have done that.
Well, you know, things happen.
Well, that's true. But, you know, that's okay. Yeah. But it is always nice. I mean, my parents for 30 years, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
30 plus, goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's I find it interesting to see
30 plus. Are you kidding me? I'm 45 years old.
Yeah, I was about to say, wait a minute.
It's almost 50 years.
Yeah. So, because it's interesting to me to see who sticks it out and who doesn't, especially if you're looking at the entertainment industry, because this new movie that Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are in now, it's the first time that I've seen her going by the name Angelina Jolie Pitt. She's actually using Pitt as the last name now.
Right.
Which, you know, it's very surprising, because sometimes you wonder what the dynamics are and what makes it work and what makes it doesn't work.
Well,
stops
and of course,
working.
Well, and of course, you know.
And then what are the consequences of it not working?
Well, but of course, you know, you get into things like Hollywood relationships. There's a different set of, I mean, every relationship has stressors, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's your money situation or family or, you know, a thousand and one things it can be that can be the thing that you know, just life, right?
Yeah.
And then you add in the realities of working in an industry, whether it's movies or music or sports or politics. I mean, they all have their own set of ways that they're going to impact how you're interacting with the world. Mm-hmm. And of course, movies is the art of pretending. You always hear about the,
I get paid to lie.
Well, you get paid
to make stuff up.
You get paid to have chemistry with other people on camera.
Yeah.
And I mean, not particularly to point a finger at this particular couple, but of course, you know, their coming together as a couple was a bit of a scandal at the time.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you can go back all the way back in movie history. And of course, you know, Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton and
Elizabeth Taylor
and everybody else.
Well, Marilyn Monroe, another one.
Oh, sure. So you end up with, you know, because you're interacting with that person for months on end.
Now, the reason I bring this up.
Yeah.
Partly. One, you know, to acknowledge my parents' marriage anniversary, but also to look at the fact that some people think that the breakup of the marriage between George and Marsha Lucas was the beginning of the end for George as a filmmaker.
Okay.
And that kind of dovetails into what we're going to talk about tonight, which is Star Wars, which is...
Wait, is Star Wars coming out?
Some space movie thing claiming to be Star Wars is coming out in December. I don't know. We'll see. These young upstarts, yahoos, don't know anything. We'll have to see. I don't know. It looks very promising.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
I'm wildly optimistic.
I am so
ready with the Kool-Aid. And I really am. And
yeah. So far, I have not seen any missteps. I mean, even going into it, when everybody heard that J.J. Abrams was going to do it, it was lens flare this and lens flare that and lens flare and lens flare and lens flare. And I think in the one shot where the camera pushes into Phasma from behind on the bridge of whatever ship she's on, and you've got the red, you've got, I guess, what could be the Starkiller beam going
right
behind them. I think there's a little flare there. But
well, you could
but that's where it would make sense to have
right.
it,
I mean,
as opposed to everywhere else.
Right. I mean, you know, it is okay to have lens flare, just as long as it's not all the lens flare.
Right. And yeah. you know, in a practical sense, where it's
yeah.
where it makes sense that it actually would happen.
But you know, but even Abrams has admitted that he went too far with the lens flare.
Yeah,
well, he went for a style. He tried a visual thing.
Yeah,
and you know,
it was too much.
It was way too much.
But see, he didn't realize it until his wife slapped him down on it.
Well, but you know, we've made movies, so we can sit there and see how you get way too close to some of this stuff sometimes.
That's true.
And you forget, yeah. and when you're someone like Abrams or a Lucas.
Uh-huh.
It's sometimes you need to have someone who's leaning over your shoulder going, don't do that.
Yeah. For every George Lucas, you need a Gary Kurtz.
Oh, yeah.
That's something that a lot of people talked about when you look at the prequels, is the fact that George Lucas did not have anyone standing around there saying, no, you can't do that.
Right.
We don't have the money for that. Ha, ha, ha. You don't have the resources for that. We don't have the time for that. Gary Kurtz was probably...
Well, back in the day, often that was the case.
Yeah, you look at the accounts of the making of Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
and by that I mean Star Wars.
Right.
Not Episode 4, A New
Hope. Right, of course.
I mean Star Wars. It was a low-budget movie.
Oh, yeah.
It had very limited resources. There was a lot of stuff that George wanted to do in that he could not do because no money... not enough time. I mean, how much they spent? What, close to $2 million developing ILM before they ever shot a frame of footage?
Well, and of course you
the effects.
You know, and the expectations for that film were very small.
Oh yeah, nobody expected. Right. I mean, Lucas didn't even expect it.
Which is how George walked away with merchandising rights,
right? And changed movies forever.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, and. For all of the bad rap that he gets for the prequels,
mm-hmm.
we need to acknowledge that so much of what we've got in the film industry now is a result of Star Wars.
Oh, of course.
And this interview that he did recently where he basically said, I don't want to direct anything else for public consumption ever again forever. I think it's kind of a shame because...
Well, he wants to make films. He wants to make those little experimental films, which nobody wants to see. That's what he says.
Yeah. Well, see, and I don't buy that. I don't think there's not an audience for a George Lucas picture. I think the audience for a George Lucas Star Wars picture might be diminished.
Well, but he just had that fantasy film.
Oh, the animated one?
Yeah.
But he didn't direct it. That was just his production.
Well, but it also tanked.
Right, but I don't think it was. I don't think it was because it was a George Lucas.
Well, no, thing. I don't think it was necessarily because
badly done. but the idea of such an influential filmmaker going away, I'm going to take my marbles and go home because he's had his feelings hurt. That.
Well, but okay,
it's sad in one way, but in another, it seems a little petulant on his side. But I would go and see a movie directed by George Lucas. I don't know that I necessarily want to go see a Star Wars movie that he does because nobody tells him no. Now that Disney owns it and Kathleen Kennedy is in charge, you know, if Lucas came back to direct... I have no problem imagining Kathleen Kennedy sitting there going, no, George.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you put me in charge for a reason. We can't do that.
Well, but also the fact that there, you know, he would be playing in the wheelhouse that he invented, but the rules have changed. The story has changed. I mean, these folks have an arc. They are building the universe. They have, you know, it might be the things that he created, but they have assumed control of where the story is going.
Yeah.
And I think that would automatically make him kind of have to play in a certain way that is restricted and focused creatively. Because he certainly, you know, it's not as if he doesn't have you know, really interesting ideas.
Oh, no question.
I mean, you can't deny the fact that he's actually had a lot of really influential ideas in terms of storytelling.
Can you imagine a film industry in a world where Star Wars never got made? Because he shopped that around to a couple of different, Universal passed on it. Everybody said no. Until Alan Ladd Jr. took a chance on it on 20th Century Fox. But what if Laddie had said no? What if they'd all said, this will never sell, nobody's going to do it, nobody's going to buy it? And if we had a film industry now that never had Star Wars,
what would it look like?
What would it look like?
You know, that's a really, really hard thing to do because, it is.
Because you think about it, everything that came out of Star Wars, Industrial Light and Magic.
Sure.
So all the computer-generated CGI stuff.
Right.
Stop motion, the renaissance of stop motion, because, before that it was Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, yeah.
And that was it. I mean, nobody was doing it. RenderMan software came out of that, which led to Pixar.
Sure.
So you went out in Pixar, not in the current iteration. Motion control cameras, computer control cameras. They developed those things. Mm-hmm. What else? The resurrection of the orchestral score.
Yeah.
For the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
The resurrection of the 20th Century Fox fanfare.
Sure.
Up until that point, it had fallen into disuse.
Right.
And Lucas brought it back as part of this, this big epic sweeping movie experience thing, right?
You know, the alternate history of
we should write that
in genre fiction is, of course, hugely popular. Of course, Man in the High Castle,
which is getting good reviews,
really good reviews. And it would be an interesting thought experiment to see what kind of world you would end up with in terms of the cinematic universe, because
you would have to make a list of everything that Star Wars influenced.
Right.
And then Dykstra Flex camera.
And then ask yourself, if it had not been Star Wars, who would have stepped into that void?
And what would it look like?
And or would anybody have stepped into that void? Would we have gotten to those points yet? And I think some of that stuff you probably would have gotten there, because there's a lot of very very smart people and experimental people.
Right.
But if it wasn't Lucas, who might have taken us there? Spielberg, of course.
But Spielberg, when he was working on Jaws, I mean, they couldn't get the shark to work. If that had gone worse than it actually had gone, Jaws would never have been the hit that it was either. And Spielberg would have been done.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that? Because that's right there.
There are a whole lot of films that are controlled chaos.
Yeah.
But the fact that
Bruce didn't work, they actually made it work for the film.
Right.
So they got those few shots that actually worked. But if the shark had never worked properly,
right,
Jaws would have been a cut rate B-lister that never would have gone anywhere, never would have made any money, never would have been a hit. And Spielberg would have been done. That was his first major big thing after Duel.
Right. I don't know that necessarily you could say that it would have been it would have ended up being a film that wasn't noticed. It had a really strong cast.
Right. But, the central conceit of the whole thing is the shark.
Right. But these folks would...
I know, you get Richard Dreyfuss, but... You look at, Richard Dreyfuss at the time was just coming into being a huge star. He wasn't a star yet. Roy Scheider was there, sort of. I mean, they were big, popular, recognizable names.
Right, yeah.
But they weren't megastars like they ended up being later. You know, Richard Dreyfuss in Jaws is not Richard Dreyfuss in Mr. Holland's Opus.
Well, no, but that's also, 20 years later.
Right.
So, I agree. It's... it would be very, very interesting to see because, of course, that actually became a massively influential in terms of story.
Mm-hmm.
So science fiction films had kind of fallen by the wayside.
Right.
And that really influenced. Now, you know, your things like, you know, you wouldn't have had Battlestar Galactica.
Well, without Jaws, you wouldn't have had Close Encounters.
Right. So you wouldn't have had, there's, so much of this stuff builds on everything else. And that's, it would have come back around.
Yeah.
Because we know that these stuff works and these things work that way.
And without Close Encounters, you wouldn't have E.T.
Right.
Without Close Encounters, E.T., Star Wars, you wouldn't have Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm, right.
All of that would have been gone. Would never have, it never would have come to fruition the way it did.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of easy to sit there and look at what would happen if this actor had been cast instead of that actor. Of course, the Pierce Brosnan as Bond during the Range and Steel days, or
Tom Selleck as Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Of course, Back to the Future with its original lead.
Eric Stoltz.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, the idea, though, that you've got, you know, from Knight Rider, one man can make a difference. You think about how much of a difference Star Wars actually has made.
Oh, sure.
In the industry. And people just don't... And granted, you know, Lucas took it too far himself with the prequels because it was all green screen. Let's just do everything virtual set and all.
Well,
CG,
you know, there was a lot of miniature work in
there,
that.
Yeah, there was.
I mean, we tend to forget that. But no, I know what you mean. It's, in fact,
he went overboard with the tech and didn't concentrate enough on the story.
Well, one of the guys over on IO9 is going back and watching all the films again.
Yeah, right. I saw that.
And I've been reading those reviews, and you know, yeah, there's. Because they're doing the prequels first, mm-hmm. Of course, you know, narratively,
right?
And it's interesting because, of course, I never had a problem with the battle scenes in any of those films. There's some that worked better than others, but overall,
sure.
I mean, it was, you know, they were
well, big. They're big action sets.
Yeah, exactly. And they're those are often a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fun to watch. Things go boom. I like.
Well, that's all they're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's all that's meant for.
Sure, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it does become narratively an issue when your best parts of your film are when things go boom.
Yeah.
So, and you know, doing fantastic Alec Guinness impersonations. That's if that's the highlight of your picture. But the idea somehow that we would never have had a Star Wars-like film seems to me unlikely. We would have had something. Something would have come along.
Who would have done it? Roger Corman, maybe?
Well, but Corman...
Battle Beyond the Stars was Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, you know, Battlestar Beyond the Stars was Seven Samurai. Which Star Wars was Seven Samurai. You know, it's the fact that we would have, oh God, you know what would have happened?
What?
A young Quentin Tarantino would have decided to, inspired by his love of Japanese cinema, would have decided to make a science fiction film based on a Kurosawa movie. And
you think it would have been Tarantino?
Well, it could. No, he was too young. He would have been too young at that point. But I don't think it would have waited that long for us to get, you know, Reservoir Dogs era. Because
Everybody else that came out of that time period, De Palma, Coppola, Scorsese, who else is of that era?
Well, and that becomes you know, these guys were. All these folks were massively influenced by a lot of the really great filmmakers of the past. So, I mean, De Palma spent a significant chunk of his career trying to be Hitchcock,
mm-hmm.
with varying degrees of success. I still maintain that some of that stuff is actually a lot of fun to watch, especially if you happen to be a Hitchcock fan.
Yeah. I know. There's a scene in The Untouchables in the movie where it's after Connery's character has been killed, and they go to the train station to get the bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The Battleship Potemkin scene?
They walk in, and they look at the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, I think, 7 minutes until the train's supposed to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a clock to it. That scene is 7 minutes long.
Oh,
so that whole bit with the baby carriage and the slow motion and the shoot the guys and the battleship
Potemkin scene.
Yeah, so that's me right there. Well, and I
actually like it when real time stuff is done.
Yeah,
there was that Johnny Depp Christopher Walken movie Nick of Time, which did not do particularly well, and it's not a particularly great movie, but. It was Johnny Depp actually playing an ordinary person without no crazy hats or weird voices. I know, it's a thing. He's just a dad in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's got to get his daughter back, and Christopher Walken is the bad guy. And it's the film is just fun to watch.
Right.
It's just fun. And it's almost real time. There's parts of the film that it doesn't, but there's parts of the film that play out in real time.
Yeah, kind of like 24.
Yeah, it was billed as a real time film, but there's something when they get a sense of tension, and we know, and you know, I'm sure our listeners know as well, you guys at home, you know that film can how long something, you know, tension is time.
Mm-hmm.
And a second can be forever, and 5 seconds can be really forever, and then a minute of screen time where nothing happens, and you're expecting it to be something happen. That's called early John Carpenter, and you know that was the early days of the horror revival in the '80s, where tension was king, and a lot of classic horror as well. So, but
I think that's one of the things that made Star Wars work so well was the pace. You know, the editing and the pacing of it.
Oh, sure. But Lucas was also a fan of the old serials.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I don't know.
I don't know that there was anybody else out there that was. Yeah, I mean, not like he was.
Okay, I'm sure there was.
He soaked it in.
I'm sure there was, but because they certainly have reasons to inspire being a fan.
Yeah.
But I can't think of anybody off the top of my head who, you know, we know is, you know.
Yeah, because everybody...
The other big fan of serials.
Everybody else that we know came after that. Tarantino, yeah. James Cameron.
Oh, sure.
You know, James Cameron came out of Roger Corman's camp.
Mm-hmm.
You have Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez.
Right.
Who else? John Badham. Mm-hmm. Robert Zemeckis. All of them were the next group.
Right.
That came out of all of the different places. You didn't have... I mean, out of that first set, that USC set... You had De Palma, Scorsese, Coppola, Lucas, Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
Well, and you look at the breakdown there. The first four sixths, what over half, almost two thirds of that is folks who went into the thriller, drama, you know, crime dramas,
yeah, mob movies,
you know, crime dramas and thrillers, and that's out of. That's out of the you know 1970s you know the crime dramas and all that stuff built out of noir and what it turned into for the detective movies and things like that, the police detective films.
Yeah, so we would have gotten a lot more French Connections,
which is not necessarily a bad thing because French Connections is a good movie.
It's a good movie,
but
or Serpico.
Yeah, and I think. Because these things do go in cycles, right? But the thing is that you have to almost let some of these things burn themselves out and lie fallow for a while. Because, of course, at that period, you know, the Western had been king. prior, and it wasn't anymore at that point. But you know, the Western had been king for like 20 years, if not longer. Because let's see, we had westerns in the 30s and 40s,
right?
Of course, Western serials, and then of course, you know, the big Western films in the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. and a lot of Westerns on TV.
Magnificent Seven being one of them, but which is also another Seven Samurai.
Yeah, but it was dying. I mean, it was losing its, and we didn't get, and when it did die, we didn't get a really good Western revival until Unforgiven, mm-hmm. which was what?
No, you got to count Silverado.
Well, okay, but no,
it wasn't a revival.
The problem with Silverado is that not enough people, it didn't register with enough people, because I love Silverado.
I do too.
It's a great movie.
I spent years looking for the soundtrack.
It is a fantastic Western. Mm-hmm. And another one of those films, you just look at that cast and go, how did they get all these cool people in this movie?
But that was before they were all these cool people.
I know.
Yeah.
But then you look at critical successes, the films that reached out and grabbed an audience and grabbed the critics and mm-hmm. got that. So you didn't, you know, your Tombstones and your Wyatt Earps and your Unforgiven, you know, that whole little stretch in there.
Right.
Where the Western was suddenly a thing again.
Yeah.
Unforgiven,
you're right. Unforgiven was the one that was the jewel in the crown,
And I think the reason that worked was because you went back and you had Clint Eastwood. You had the guy who had, you know, basically embedded in our minds the Sergio Leone Westerns, mm-hmm. you know, and he's the face of that, and inverting the character, making it, you know, instead of taking the mythic qualities of the Western, the good, the pure good versus evil, the black hat, white hat.
It's almost a reverse redemption.
It is. I mean,
in a way.
Because what they did is that they strip off the veneer and mm-hmm. the glamour and make the myth the man, and I think it actually becomes, in terms of storytelling, what works there is what Lucas couldn't do in the prequels,
mm-hmm.
because the Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, they all play with these big mythic concepts, right?
Right.
The Force. You know, the
it's very good versus evil.
Yeah, the hero's journey and all these things. Very Joseph Campbell.
Damsel in distress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you get into the prequel, we have trade negotiations. You know, yes, okay, the universe has to be run. There has to be there has to be admin, right?
Yeah. Although,
but
I've
still,
got,
nobody I've wants to see that.
The Ring Theory essay that Mike Climo did,
sure.
we talked about it on mm-hmm. Echo Chamber, and we'll link to that. But the idea that all of this mirrors, you know, the prequels mirror the other one, the original
sure.
trilogy and all of mm-hmm. that, it actually does follow a structure that I can actually see now that I couldn't see before, and it gives me a better appreciation for the prequels. I still don't like them as much, but I like them better than I did after
right.
reading this essay. It's a really, really fascinating piece, and he's gotten a lot of good press out of it too, because it actually makes sense, and it's not an easy read. It's an academic paper, so
mm-hmm,
it's going to be
sure.
a slog. But it's an easy slog, but it's well worth the time to read that. And we will link to it from our page on this episode.
Yeah, I just I think one of the reasons Star Wars resonated the way that it did for that entire generation and every generation that's followed.
Yeah.
Because we're what? This would be the third generation now? Am I?
Third or fourth.
Third or fourth. Since that came out. The mythic quality of that,
mm-hmm.
you know. You've got the dashing hero. You've got the damsel in distress. You've got the hero's journey. You've got the loyal friend. I mean, you've got, you know.
The comic relief.
You've got, you know, the evil king,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, Grand Moff Tarkin in the first one,
right?
You know, these are big concepts. They resonate. It's classic storytelling. But again, you get into the prequels, and it's like, you know, Okay.
Part of the,
a lot of that drops away.
Part of the problem, well, and I've said this before, the biggest problem that I have with the prequels, besides the fact that it relies so much on CG and on story, is the fact that the story that we did get, what little story there is, doesn't line up in the continuity with the original trilogy, especially as it concerns Obi-Wan's relationship to Anakin.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, when I first met him, he was already a great pilot and a skilled warrior and all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute. Now you're meeting him and he's a 10-year-old kid. That doesn't track. So there were things that Obi-Wan said about Luke's father in the original trilogy that didn't carry over into the prequels. And that's what popped me out of the narrative looking sideways at it.
Oh, sure. Well, there's some definite story questions there, because the implication is that the Jedi and the Sith, I mean the length of history and mm-hmm. the length of the conflict and the Clone Wars are like this distant past kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, you mean like
it was just
Thursday?
just 15, 20 years ago? What?
So that isn't, yeah. So yeah. You lost your sense of a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. You know, if a long time ago was Thursday, your scale is completely screwed.
It's almost like World War II. You know, if I met somebody now who had fought in World War II,
mm-hmm.
or I guess maybe Korea now, the Korean War, they'd be about Obi-Wan's age. And, you know, in the 70s and 80s, the wizened figure that you get with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Sure.
And there's not enough time, you're right, there's not enough time passage between the prequels and the original to justify that sense of space, that sense of scale.
Right.
Of time mm-hmm. passing. Because Obi-Wan's kind of, I mean, he's a hermit, and he's not people skills. He's keeping to himself, and so there's that whole baggage that he's carrying with him.
Right.
That it doesn't feel like it just doesn't feel earned after the prequels.
Well, not only that, but you also have to accept, I mean, you know, do not, it's always, sometimes it's not a good idea to stare directly at the story, because you have to accept that Obi-Wan Kenobi, or Ben Kenobi, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, huge difference in the names there, went to the planet where his greatest enemy and old friend grew up, and hid in relatively plain sight, and for 20 years, nobody noticed. The Empire has the worst search programs of any kind. They didn't.
Who's this Skywalker kid out here? Yeah, he's nobody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Apparently, the Empire does not have Google, or.
Right.
It's like, okay, hang on. And honestly, that diminishes Vader. That diminishes
Well, the whole prequel trilogy diminishes Vader, because, and I wrote an essay about this a while back, why I don't care about Anakin Skywalker.
Right. Uh-huh.
I don't care about Anakin. I don't care about this Anakin. I don't care about this version of Anakin.
Right.
I care about the Anakin Skywalker we got at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
I care about the Anakin Skywalker Obi-Wan Kenobi told his kid about in the first movie.
Well, but all, and
that and, Anakin I'm interested in, but also, I haven't seen him yet.
You also have to accept that Obi-Wan Kenobi is a liar.
Well, the prequel certainly made him that way.
Yeah. So,
but anyway, I don't know. All right, let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
SuperheroStuff.com is our sponsor. They are running right now the gift guide. It is available there on their website, which you could find when you type in SuperheroStuff.com. Or you can click on the link over on our page. They're also running a special on the Star Wars Saga Hero Box. Now, the Hero Box is you buy the box, you get the box, and there's stuff in the box.
Hey. I like that idea.
This particular one is Star Wars stuff in the box, and it's available while supplies last or through December 18th, whichever one comes first. And I want to shout out to Micah Dwyer, who up until this week has been our contact at Superhero Stuff, and now will not be anymore because he's got a promotion.
Yeah?
He got a promotion and is now going to be going over into the purchasing department side of things. So congratulations to him, and we want to welcome Brian Welch and Kara. You know what? Micah didn't give me her last name. Kara's going to be doing all the social media for Superhero Stuff. So they've replaced Micah with two people.
That tells you
a little bit about it.
That's right.
So congratulations to all of them, and we want to welcome Brian and Kara to our neck of the woods. Hopefully we'll be able to get everything going on the social media side of things. Maybe do some more stuff. Maybe do some more promotional items and some
like
specials, and giveaways and stuff. So we're going to let you hear from them. We will be right back. We're going to refill coffee mugs and continue talking about our Star Wars stuff when H2O continues right after this.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, and so is our discussion of each and every episode as we gather down in the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters. Join us for recaps, analysis, and discussion, with a few digressions along the way, and you do have security clearance to listen. Level 117 every week, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, only on scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
You want a multiverse? We've got them all. Get the latest news at scififorme.com.
Hello, folks, and welcome back. We hope you've enjoyed our little news from superherostuff.com there. You definitely should check them out. We are big fans. I am Timothy Harvey. I am sitting across from Mr. Jason Hunt.
That would be me.
And
that would be I.
It is I, so that would be me. Yes, I think you can.
Okay.
Structurally, that would be the way it would do it. I did not necessarily do great in the grammar section of English. I hated diagramming sentences.
We had a big staff meeting here not too long ago, and I did the big it's and it's speech.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Got on to just about everybody for that one. The one that I didn't point out was her and her friend leading a sentence, you know, leading off a sentence instead of she and her friend, her and her friend.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It just makes my teeth itch seeing something like that, or hearing very well educated people saying they came to visit her and I.
Right.
They came to. Yeah. I'm like, no. You don't. No, dude. Don't
well, you know, the English language is such a very curious, flexible, odd thing that has.
I know, but I is not the subject of. It's not the object.
I've always found it very interesting to find the origin of where words came out of.
Yeah.
Because the English language, we steal from everybody and incorporate it and find new ways of saying it.
Exactly.
It's like you can the pronunciation changes, but then the meaning changes, but just the way the words evolve.
Mm-hmm. This grammar lesson brought to you by
exactly.
The letter
right.
I.
Well, and it's
a word. It's a plan. It's Letterman. Bum, bum, bum. Do you remember who did the voice track for that?
No.
Joan Rivers.
Really?
Joan Rivers did the opening narration for The Adventures of Letterman.
I did not know that.
Faster than Rolling O. more powerful than a silent E. Able to leap capital T in a single bound. I think I got those backwards. No, I did it right. I did it right. It's a word. It's a plan. It's Letterman. And he goes, "Hi, I am Letterman." He's in the quarterback jersey.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so much fun. Joan Rivers.
I honestly did not know that.
Well, you know, Morgan Freeman got started over there too.
Oh, yeah.
On the Electric Company. Of course. Easy reader.
It's pretty. We talk about the golden age of movies that we had. We also had the golden age of public television.
Yeah.
Sesame Street and Electric Company.
Zoom. 3-2-1 Contact was in the 80s.
Reading Rainbow came out. That was the next, really kind of the next generation, but we kind of got.
Yeah, that was on the tail end.
But we had Mr. Rogers and we had Captain Kangaroo. And
do you remember, we talked about, a few weeks ago, we talked about the crazy fan theories.
Yeah.
The idea that the kids on the Magic School Bus ended up being the, was it Captain Planet and the Planeteers?
Right, yeah.
Those are always fun little connections to make.
Oh, sure. Know? Well, and there was...
They've got nothing to do with Star Wars, but, right.
But it kind of does, because... Star Wars kicked off this kind of renaissance of the science fiction genre, for good and for ill, because there was a lot of crap that kind of came out. Now, there was a lot of it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Battle Beyond the Stars, Roger Corman. Okay, it's not a good movie,
right?
But it's fun.
And it gave Richard Thomas something to do besides John Boy.
Right, even though it was John Boy in space, because he really wasn't playing, and he wasn't being asked to play. Right. But we had Sybil Danning in that one, and oh goodness, that was a great cast. Mm-hmm. But also in many ways, the return of recycling footage,
right?
Which the low budget studios in the 30s and 40s, it wasn't a big deal. But
Battlestar Galactica did it a lot too. Yeah, they recycled all sorts of combat battle footage throughout the entire season.
But no one to greater parody and visual pain than V, the television series.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just, that was painful.
See, now the miniseries were great.
Oh, well, see, the miniseries were great. But the miniseries were an allegory. And I think the first miniseries especially. The first miniseries...
the second one was where it started to go off the rails with the kid.
Oh, well,
that was when Kenneth Johnson ended up not being part of that.
When you introduce the magic child,
mm-hmm.
who glows and saves the world.
Because there was no father. It was just the midichlorians.
So, magic children.
Oh, wait.
What is that new film that's coming out next year? I just saw the trailer for it. Midnight Express.
Haven't seen this one.
It looks good.
Yeah.
It's very Spielberg inspired. It's set now, but it's trying to evoke that kind of Close Encounters, E.T., that kind of, vibe. Which we would not have had if we did not have Star Wars.
Right.
And the trailer looks fantastic. It looks really, really interesting, and I'm just like, it doesn't really it tells you things without telling you things, as opposed to say the Star Wars trailer, the first Star Wars trailer. We went back. Oh gosh, I think
has anybody done the a super duper duper triple looper mashup of everything that's out there yet?
There's been a couple.
There's the super cut,
right?
There's the super duper cut,
right? I don't think
we've gone beyond that. We're adding the footage from the TV spots, yeah,
right? Because that we had the really really detailed, which a lot of new footage from the Finn TV spot,
yeah.
And are you ready?
And I tell you, seeing him in the gunwale, it's just like
I think. Okay, first of all, odds are good. Someone will say, I have a bad feeling about this. All
right. Oh, yeah, you have to. Have to.
But I think odds are almost as good that at some point, Harrison Ford will utter the words, "Don't get cocky, kid." because he actually now had the age difference.
He can actually really say that. Yeah,
yeah. So,
well, and I've maintained from the very beginning when they first announced they were going to do this movie, the requirement that I have of this movie to count as a legitimate Star Wars movie is the opening shot has to be a Star Destroyer. Whether that's the wrecked Star Destroyer that we've seen in Jakku.
It's like right there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking maybe we've seen the opening shot with that. Or it's, you know, the one where the shuttle is going up to the new Star Destroyer, the First Order Star Destroyer.
Right, yeah.
We've seen that in the trailers. Something like that has to be the first shot. Or it's not a Star Wars movie. That's one of the that's another complaint that I've got up with the prequels, is that they didn't follow the form. You know, Timothy Zahn's books, the Thrawn trilogy that were the beginning of the extended universe.
Right.
All three of those all start with a Star Destroyer, just like it's a Star Wars movie.
Right.
And I think this one has to as well. And if J.J. knows his stuff, which everybody's assuming that he does, and with Kathleen Kennedy in charge over there, I would expect, you know, Lawrence Kasdan written his script, I would expect a Star Destroyer to open this movie.
Right.
That's what I hope.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
But the TV spots look really cool. What do you think that thing is the Stormtroopers got that Finn's fighting him with?
It looks an awful lot like a... almost like a close quarter lightsaber dagger.
It's almost it seems kind of like a force pike or something.
Yeah, but I think it's because the Jedi and the Force and all this stuff. It seems to have slipped into myth.
I had read that somewhere, and I don't remember where I read this. If it was on Heroic Hollywood or if it was on IO9 or something, where. Following the events of Return of the Jedi, and I've still not read Aftermath. I've got it on the shelf over here, but I've got to read it.
Right.
But apparently, one of the rumors of this current story is that following Jedi, what's left of the Empire cranked up the propaganda machine and painted Luke Skywalker as a villain.
Mm.
The evil man what destroyed the government type.
Sure.
Thing, which is one of the reasons why he's been in hiding all these years, and why the Jedi never came back as a thing.
Right.
Which maybe makes a certain amount of sense. I think a lot of it is going to depend on how this new movie opens, really.
Right.
Because we don't know anything about the First Order. We don't know who they are. And again, you have all of this continuity now in. Everything, the comic books and the novels and Rebels and all of these different things are now all part of the same canon. It's all connected.
Of course.
And it has me a little bit concerned that if I go into this movie and I haven't read this book or I haven't looked at these comic books, how much catch-up am I going to have to do sitting there going, wait a minute, who's that again? Do I need a playbook?
Sure, but I honestly don't think that's going to be... as much of an issue.
I don't think it will be. I hope it won't be.
Because I think that as much as you want that cross promotion, you know, from a business standpoint, you obviously want that cross promotion.
Yeah. But you also have to make sure that the movie stands on its own so people aren't sitting there going, what the huh?
Right. And and you do have to there's very little question in my mind that they're not aware of this.
Yeah.
And they are not going to burn their bridges with the wider audience because that would be stupid. And they are not generally, you know, that dumb over there.
Only when it comes to John Carter.
Well, John Carter is...
Wait.
Yeah.
Let's go back.
Mm-hmm.
Because you talk about the impact Star Wars had.
Sure.
We've talked before about the impact John Carter has had.
Yeah.
John Carter gave us Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon and Superman
right.
and Star Wars.
Yes, this is very true.
So, let's extrapolate a little bit from that. George Lucas, who wasn't George Lucas, wouldn't have come out of the crime thriller set. It would have been somebody who maybe not necessarily was looking at the Kurosawa movies, but was going back even further.
Oh, yeah.
And looking at Burroughs and Arthur Conan Doyle and that group. But Burroughs especially with that. But you've got Arthur Conan Doyle with The Lost World.
Mm-hmm.
You've got King Kong in that group. You've got Burroughs with Tarzan and John Carter. Somebody would have been reading those books, Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
And said, I wonder what this would look like on film. I wonder what this would look like on screen. Somebody would have made that movie back then. And maybe Star Wars wouldn't have been the movie to do it. Maybe John Carter would have been, you know, Princess of Mars would have been the beginning of the science fiction renaissance.
Well, I think yes and no. But I think the no part would fall into the fact that so many of that early stuff also straddled the fantasy line. And so I don't think you would have gotten your odds of getting a fantasy film versus a science fiction film are probably better.
True.
Because it'd be much easier to sell at the time, especially.
Because you would have had the romantic part of it.
Well, yeah, too. John Carter's a fantasy film. Because, I mean, if you look at the science fiction aspects are there, but it's much more, in broad strokes, the fantasy.
Right. Very much like Star Wars was.
Yeah.
Is.
But I think it would be a lot... I think your visual aesthetic would have felt a lot more like a fantasy film versus a science fiction film.
Right. Which would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Although I really like the production design for John Carter.
It's brilliant.
I think that the science fiction aspects, I think, played really well. But I think that it's a really, really good question, and I just don't know, because it's so hard to look at the filmmakers who are playing around at that time period.
Because Kubrick did 2001.
Right. But
Kubrick was going to be the one to do AI with Spielberg.
Right.
So he dabbled a little bit in science fiction, but not...
He wasn't
a science fiction movie maker.
Right. No,
of course, back then there weren't any that were in that label.
He was just interested in telling stories.
Right.
In whatever genre that appealed.
Hitchcock was all thriller and mystery and suspense.
Yeah, you wouldn't have him. I think one of the reasons that
Serling?
Everyone was so... Well, okay, see...
Serling didn't ever make the transition to movies.
Right. And I don't know that he necessarily would have wanted to. Did he ever? I don't know that he ever did. Yeah, I don't recall any. And I could be completely wrong here, but I do not recall ever reading that he wanted to merely make, the jump into making features. But you look at some of this stuff and you think about the fact that no one expected Star Wars to succeed.
Yep.
So you're almost having to think about a filmmaker who nobody had any expectations of in the 70s.
I wonder if it would have been somebody outside of the States, somebody like Sergio Leone or maybe somebody from England.
You could have gotten somebody out of England. You could have gotten somebody out of there were some South American filmmakers in the 70s doing some interesting things. There were certainly the folks, the Italian cinema, I'm trying to think. I can't remember anybody. I don't remember much science fiction.
Who made Barbarella? Who directed that one?
Oh goodness, I don't recall. But it was a French director.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, the French. Aren't that many. Well, okay, but Heavy Metal, the original magazine, Metal Hurlant, coming out of France.
Which is going to, I hear, is it's getting another anthology.
I know. That's going to be kind of cool.
Movie or TV? Or what are they doing this time?
I wanted to say it was television. I thought it was going to be premium.
And it's going to be called Metal Hurlant.
Yeah.
It's not going to be called Heavy Metal.
Which is actually kind of interesting because if they do it in the sense that the French magazine, the original magazine version did... it was edgier, and certainly more experimental Which could be very, very interesting because, you know, the storytelling style was different.
Yeah.
And there is an, aesthetic that could be very interesting. I mean, you know, Mobius came out of that. I just saw a list of the, like the worst video games, and there was a apparently I had no idea this video game existed that was based on the Druina series from Heavy Metal, which was basically sex and violence and death and aliens. And I'm like, they made a video game of this because it's like an X-rated comic. It's like, you know, this is like the kind of thing that you would find in a heavy metal in a French science fiction magazine, but not necessarily a game on the PS2. And I was just like, what is this? And they showed a clip from the walkthrough, and it's terrible.
Roger Vadim. Directed Barbarella.
I think. Did he marry her too? I think he married.
I don't know, maybe.
I think he and Fonda, or at least if they weren't married, then Fonda was. He had a lovely little stint with several Hollywood starlets, as I recall. But yeah, that and visually that was very much influenced by its French science fiction origin. So you could have gotten a very, very different thing. But the question comes: would you have gotten a? Could you have gotten a story based on the heroic journey? Very, you know, very much Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell meets Tom Mix. Meets.
Well, it's King Arthur in space.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but it's, you know, there's elements of the Western in there. There's elements of, you know, World War II, I mean, obviously dogfights. Mm-hmm. So it's your, you know, the visual aesthetic of the Empire is clearly influenced by the Nazis.
Yeah.
You would have, I mean, there's a lot of things that came together with that production crew. Because, of course, George didn't do it on his own. He did it with an amazing production crew.
And most of them came out of England.
Yeah. Well, that's, and of course... British filmmakers have been for a long, long time not having anywhere near the budget that American film and television people have.
Yeah.
You know what would have been fantastic is to get somebody who did Quartermass. Who did Quartermass in the Pit?
Oh. That's a good question.
What years were Blake Seven?
Blake Seven was early 70s, I think.
Was that pre-Star Wars?
No. I'm wrong. I think late 70s, 80s.
Okay.
Because we got Blake Seven about the same time we got Tom Baker on PBS.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So.
Because we had Doctor Who and Blake Seven, and then as we're getting toward the end of the Doctor Who run is when we got Red Dwarf.
Well, yeah, because Doctor Who ended in 89.
And then we've got... what was the one that Rowan Atkinson was in?
Blackadder?
Blackadder. Yeah, that was there. He had Fawlty Towers. All of that stuff imported into PBS about the same time.
Sure. Well, but
I don't know that we ever got Quartermass over here on PBS, did we?
Well, no. I think there was, two, maybe three?
What about Peter Bogdanovich? Has he ever done any science fiction at all?
You know what?
I don't think he has.
Blake Seven was 78 to 81. So...
Yeah. I mean, John Borman, maybe?
Would we have gotten Blake Seven if we had... Because Blake Seven is kind of the anti-Star Trek. It's right. The inverse of Star Trek.
And one of the things... And one of the reasons we got Star Wars is because Star Trek was on TV. You know, we've heard that George Lucas was a big Star Trek fan.
I kind of wonder what would happen because you could... I think you'd be more likely to get it out of... a European director or something Star Wars-esque out of a European director.
Who directed Excalibur?
Was that John Borman?
I think that was.
I think it was John Borman.
Yeah. That would have been that. I don't know. He may be the one that you'd look to do something like that because he was doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, but again, you're looking at something where the studio didn't the studio had no expectations.
Right.
So they weren't exactly like leaning over the shoulder. So,
yeah. Here's some money. Go make the movie.
Right. And it wasn't even that much money. So especially even
until it started escalating.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we need more. We need more. We need more.
All right. Well, but, you know. That's like movie making. That's got to work.
As long as it's not Heaven's Gate.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, how many times have we sat and, you know, planned out our films and looked at what we want to do?
Oh, yeah.
And we look at how much money we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that want to do list becomes what can we do?
Yeah. Well, but you again.
And then you trim it in half because you want to do certain things well.
Oh, of course.
So you can't do all of it and have it all go well.
Well,
because that just doesn't work out that way.
I tell you what, though, there is, and we've talked about this before, too, there is a very strong argument to be made that restrictions fuel creativity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you have, you know, that goes back to Gary Kurtz being a producer on Star Wars. You had somebody there standing right next to George Lucas saying, no, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the wherewithal to do it, whether it's money or time or material or space or.
But even aside from that, you end up with somebody like, you know, going, a sound designer going out and, you know, whacking a metal wire on a by a telephone pole, and suddenly, oh yeah, that's the noise. That's the blaster noise.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And because you're forced to be creative, you're forced to think about things in different ways because you can't just throw.
Well, and you've heard
money at the budget.
You've heard the story about the lightsaber sound effect.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Complete accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those kind of things happen. Well, and when I was making, which movie was I making? I was making Vanguard Dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the movie that I did on a spaceship.
Right.
So you've got to have spaceship sounds. Well, where are you going to find spaceship sounds? You're going to have beeps and bells and whistles and chirps and whatever, right?
Sure.
So I went out, and, you know, you got to have engines and you got to have mechanical sounds and stuff and intercoms and all sorts of things. So I went out and I took my camera around and I just recorded all sorts of different things. I recorded motorcycles and air conditioner units and refrigerators, all sorts of these things. And didn't ever quite find the right sound for the engine of the ship. Because you want it to sound, you know, you look at Star Trek and you get that background sound inside the spaceship. Right.
Of course.
It sounds much different than an engine that you hear outside from the outside.
Sure, of course.
So I was like, I just couldn't find that right sound, that thrumming sound until I recorded my cat purring.
Right.
Stuck the microphone up against his throat, and you get the... And you slow it down. You know, you do this in post. You slow the speed down, and there's an engine. Because it was a regular, steady, you know,
right,
thrumming
sure.
sound. And you slow it down, so it gets really down low. And, you know, suddenly there's that thing. But it goes back, you know, it's something that stuck in my head from an interview that Ben Burtt had done about all the sound effects he collected for Star Wars.
Right.
Not just pulling from the old libraries, you know, the Wilhelm scream coming from that, but he said he wanted all of the sounds to be as much organic as they could be. Not just, you know, computer generated or, you know, technical or whatever. He wanted them to sound organic because they made them sound more real. And that stuck with me. So when I'm going out and finding sound effects for my own pictures, I'm looking for the organic sounds the same way. You know, none, it doesn't necessarily. It's not going to be something that I just put together in a synthesizer.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there's so much that Star Wars changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine life without it. And now it's coming back.
It's coming back, and. If it works, and again, you know, it does seem like it's going to be, it's managed to capture the imagination of even us old, jaded, cynical, bitter old Star Wars
yep.
Star Wars fans. Padres, I'll give you a Padres, you whippersnapper. But actually, the Padres scene is still kind of fun.
It's too long, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. But
it's one lap too many.
Oh, yeah. I could see that, yeah.
Yep. Well, it's like in Crystal Skull, mm-hmm. Indiana Jones and Crystal Skull. The chase through the jungle.
Right.
It's too long. It doesn't. It works okay from a story standpoint, but it's too long.
Well, it's got too much Shia LaBeouf in it.
Well, it's a pace. For me, it's a pacing thing. I think I think he did okay.
And monkeys. Too many monkeys.
Too many monkeys. The chase was too long. The CG on that part was noticeable to the point where it was distracting.
Right.
And I have to wonder if it was on purpose because they're making a 1950s B movie.
Sure.
Right.
And well, yeah.
Too, and the effects in the 50s movies were dodgy.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Just as a little aside here, Terry Nation created Blake 7, right?
Oh, that's right.
And Terry Nation also created the Daleks for Doctor Who. According to this, this is the rather extensive Wikipedia page for Blake 7, which is I always like seeing when you've got some of these classics there where people have gone and there's lots of information.
Right.
Passage to Marseille, Dirty Dozen, Robin Hood, Brave New World, Star Trek, and classic westerns. That's where the inspiration for Blake 7.
Huh.
So it came out in 78, which means
Star Wars.
It wasn't influenced by Star Wars at all. So we would have still had Blake 7.
Yeah.
So here's the question. Because Blake 7 is the anti-Star Trek. It's darker. It's grittier.
Yeah.
You don't have the epic scale.
Right.
You don't have... Well, you kind of do, because it's fighting... It's a lone... It's a small group of people fighting against the evil empire.
Which sounds very familiar.
But it doesn't have the mythic... magic,
scale of it.
Well, but also not that mythology. The mysticism. Mysticism is
right.
But so it's still there. It ran four seasons, so there's a chance that, and it was fairly popular. And of course, it's critically acclaimed. And right. We keep getting threatened or promised, depending on your point of view, with a revival or a reboot or a new, you know, and so. Even without Star Wars, we still would have had things like Blake 7.
Well, and Doctor Who was on the air.
Star Trek probably would have come back.
Well, yeah, because Star Trek was in development as another TV series at the time Star Wars hit.
Right, so it could have come in, and it probably would have.
It would have been another series.
It would have been another series.
Yeah, you would have Phase 2
right.
as the series rather than Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Which probably would have worked itself into a motion picture at some point if there had been a science fiction film that broke out.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if we would have gotten a Doctor Who movie then. If there was no Star Wars, let's see, Star Trek goes to another series and then eventually goes to the movies.
Doctor Who, probably not, because Doctor Who was always contingent on who was running that area of the BBC.
Right.
And... You know, the last, and I cannot remember his name, who could not stand the show and wanted it dead.
Right.
You know, they were living in fear of getting cut like the last 3 or 4 years of the program. So, and I believe he at some point admitted that he was wrong. But
well, that's a good thing.
But I can't remember if that's a true story or not. But I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that. That's another one where there's the what if scenario is what if it stayed on the air?
Right.
Would it still be on the air?
So, okay, so we've got the American Masters list that we still need to generate.
Right, yes, uh-huh.
What was the other what if? If Marvel actors had been cast as DC characters.
Right, sure.
We've got that list to do.
Right.
So now we've got what if Star Wars had never happened? What would the science fiction filmed media look like?
Yeah.
So we have that speculative piece
mm-hmm.
to look forward to. Maybe horror would have been more prominent in that time.
Because
you had Halloween.
Well, but there's the other question is, if Carpenter hadn't done Halloween, another low-budget picture without a whole lot of leaning over your shoulder, what would have happened to horror? Because the slasher movie...
Yeah, it all came out of that.
The slasher movie of the 80s and 90s is a direct result because Friday the 13th was a ripoff, knockoff,
yep,
homage. They did it. Let's do it too. Quick.
Well, and then you had
give me a co-ed and some fake blood.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You had
Texas Chainsaw Massacre was earlier.
It was before.
Yeah, Tobey Hooper.
But those were the two.
Mm-hmm.
And and that was it. And before that, there wasn't really a whole lot. You had the suspense stuff, but not the blood and gore and stuff like what you had later. And then, of course, you got Friday the 13th, and then you've got what else came out of that?
Well, okay, your Friday the 13th, your Nightmare on Elm Street, The Thing. You got your, because there's your science. You know,
Alien.
Alien. Exactly. So it would be very, very interesting to see if you pulled out, it's a terrible, horrible, terrifying game of Jenga, if you pull out the pin,
yeah,
what happens to the genre afterwards?
Well, not only that, but what happens to the technology?
Oh, yeah.
Because without Star Wars, you don't have Industrial Light and Magic, you don't have Skywalker Sound, you don't have, because you don't have THX,
and you don't have... You know, Cameron loves his tech... But would we be this far along?
I don't think so.
The leaps that we have taken, I think somebody would have done it. I think someone would have found a way. It wouldn't necessarily be the same.
Yeah.
But it would be, well, good Lord, could we be on Beta? Betamax instead of VHS? Because, it was marketing. They sold it better.
That's what it was.
They sold it better.
Well, and it was a better quality product. Except VHS just... overran the market, and it was all over the place.
Sure. So, there's something, folks. If you want to play this thought experiment game, ask yourself a very important question. If Star Wars wasn't there, what happened to science fiction? If Halloween hadn't been there, what happens to horror? On television, you pull out some of these, if you lose a TV show,
Star Trek almost never happened. If they hadn't gotten a second pilot order, it would not have happened. We never would have seen the light of day.
Yeah. So it's
sliding doors.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But then that's the fun thing, that alternate universe thing. We do love that in our genre world.
Yes. And in some alternate universe, we have thousands of people that listen to this show.
We have thousands of people that listen to the show now, in my mind.
And those thousands of people are welcome to join us and share their thoughts by email, h2o@sci-fi-for-me.com, or leave us a comment on our site or on social media.
We love to hear from you.
Yes, we do. And we read every message. We listen to all the messages on the hotline, which is 573-42-SCI-FI. You can catch us on all the social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr. And our Pinterest is all cosplay all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, you can go over there and check that out. If you have a cosplay story, if you are a cosplayer and you'd like to share your story with us, you can go to cosplaydiaries.com and check that out. And in the meantime, we do invite you to listen to our other podcasts at Sci-Fi for Me Radio. You can find them on iTunes, or you can find them under the podcast button on our main site, which is sci-fi-for-me.com. And that's going to do it for us this week. Timothy Harvey.
Always a pleasure.
And those of you who are listening, thank you very much. Yes. Share the links, because your mother taught you to share. It's only polite. And we will be back with another discussion next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.